You are listening to Give Grief a Chance, and I'm your host and advanced grief recovery specialist, Diane Morgan. And these podcasts are all about bringing grief awareness out into the world, because even today, my friends, grief is hidden and it's tucked away. So come along and join me on this journey. Let's start to bring grief out into the open. And maybe you'll be brave enough to give your grief a voice. This is episode 178. Hello to all of my lovely podcast listeners and welcome to this week's episode. I hope that you're all doing really well. And as always, a big thank you to everyone who takes the time to listen to these podcasts. And of course, a quick reminder about my journals. One is called Giving Grief a Voice, and this is a beautiful gift to help guide you through your grief and look at life after loss. And the second one is Remembering Queen Elizabeth, and this is a guided grief and remembrance journal. And you can find them both on Amazon. So on this week's episode, I'm having a chat with Francesca Lynn Arnoldy. Now, Francesca is a community doula and death literacy advocate. She's the author of Map of Memory Lane, which is a picture book for children, and Cultivating the Doula Heart, Essentials of Compassionate Care, which is a doula guidebook, and the forthcoming workbook, The Death Doula's Guide to Living Fully and Dying Prepared. She is a researcher with the Vermont Conservation Lab and was the original creator of the highly popular doula training program at the University of Vermont. And you can find Francesca reflecting on birth, death, and life with the doula heart on her website, Francesca Lynn Arnoldy. So, without further ado, let's have a chat with Francesca. So, welcome to Give Grief a Chance podcast. It is so wonderful to have you here with us today, and I'm really looking forward to our time together.
Thank you, Diane. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I'm going to jump right in and ask you my first question. If you could tell us, what is a community doula?
So that is a term that I'm not sure if it's widely used or known, but it's one that just felt right for me.
Okay.
And this is because my work, I come from the birth world. So I've been a birth doula for quite some time, and I've taught childbirth classes and supported people through the postpartum period. And then I expanded my offerings to include end of life and grief. So I feel like I wanted a term that encompassed everything. So it's really about community care. And I do a variety of services, including volunteering for hospice, as well as private practice doula work. So I wanted a bigger term to be able to include all of that.
Gotcha. So what type of care and support does a doula provide?
A doula provides non-medical emotional support. And I would add to that informational and spiritual support as well. So we are a complementary layer of care in addition to any medical care that someone is receiving. Mm-hmm. And the term does include, you know, major life thresholds. We often think to birth and to the end of life, but we're even expanding beyond that to include grief as well. I've also heard some doulas support people through things like divorce, or it may have been a joke, but a dentist doula. So just through hardship and challenges, and providing that steady, compassionate, personalized support throughout those times. And so it can look like a number of things. I often think about it in terms of planning, preparing, and processing, mm-hmm. which I think are major tasks that they're top of mind for people who are about to enter into a process that feels largely unknown and mysterious, like birth and death. So beforehand, to be able to create a frame of reference and feel like we have an idea of how to best support someone through that, there's a lot of talking, rapport building, trust building, and we really go into someone's fears and hopes and wishes and try to clarify those even on paper is ideal so that the whole team can provide the kind of care that this person is looking for. And for end of life, I really lean toward legacy projects and legacy gifts, which I think is just a beautiful way to process your life and your relationships and the impact that you've had, any messages that you want to leave behind for people, and then creating customized gifts for your loved ones, your neighbors, community members, or maybe a bigger project that reflects your legacy and what you want to leave behind.
Wow, that's beautiful. So you do that with the dying person, and does the family come in as well to, to do it with you, or is it just you and that person that's dying?
It depends. I mean, it could be either. Sometimes we can come up with projects where we could complete them together, so promoting that sense of togetherness and connection while the person is still alive. And that's part of what I created with the picture book is that companion activity file to really encourage that. I mean, it can be used for after a death, but also before a death. And sometimes a person wants to kind of keep these projects private and
Oh, okay.
not let their loved ones know about them until after. So it's really up to them and their preference, and it depends on the project. Sometimes it can be very artistic, sometimes it could be something painted, it could be an interview that's recorded, audio or video, it could be a scrapbook, it could be a cookbook, it could be a garden, it could be a memory garden. There are so many different ways to work with this.
Wow. So I'm curious then, because obviously you work really closely with people, but how did COVID impact your work?
COVID was really tough for everyone for so many reasons. When COVID hit, I had been working with a friend of mine with her family, and her young husband was facing the end of life. And so we were working on trying to complete some of these remembrance gifts for his young children. And also, I was providing some respite for my friend, his wife. And then once COVID hit, it became unsafe for me to be in their home because we didn't want to jeopardize the short time that he did have left with germ exposure. So they really minimized who could come in and out of the home. So it was really just a hospice nurse. And that made it very overwhelming for the partner and for the children. So I continued to provide phone support and emotional care in that way, but I couldn't continue to work on the remembrance projects with the, who I would call my client because of his disease decline. It didn't work virtually. And for some people, it does, and you can be flexible and creative. And I know of doulas who are able to do it, record things virtually and that sufficed, or they were able to be someone's scribe. So there are ways to work with it, but it really made it so much more challenging.
Wow, that's got to be so that had to be so hard for everyone. So
Absolutely.
how are you different from what hospice offers then?
So I am a huge advocate for hospice care and also, palliative care, whatever is available in someone's community and what is the best fit for them. I think it's hugely important. I mean, some people even decide to stick with their family medicine doctor. And so as a doula, I come in and I assess what is already in place, what is already available, and what else is needed, and what can I provide? So then we think about this person's circumstances, how much of a natural network of support do they already have established or not? Do they have family that's across the country, and so I'm only going to be in contact with them over the phone or email? Do they have people who are present? Do they need help sort of organizing and orchestrating the schedule and their medical appointments and visitations, visits with people? And then whatever projects and planning that they want to accomplish, do they need that more organizational support and that broad view of it? Or Do they need a presence? Is it more of a physical presence that they need in respite care because they maybe only have one caregiver in the family who's feeling really burdened and overwhelmed by it? And so then I also think about beyond me, what else do I know of in the community and what can I identify that could be supportive as well?
Wow, there's a lot of work, a lot that goes into it.
Yes,
So
absolutely.
when should someone contact a death doula?
I mean, I think earlier is generally more ideal, but a death doula can step in at any point, really. So sometimes it's really for the end and someone's thinking about their vigil, their active dying period. Sometimes it's families are becoming very overwhelmed and they just reach out. It's like an SOS, you know, I need help here, I need backup here. And then we might be able to bridge someone to potentially the respite home. We have one locally here in our state, and there are many elsewhere as well. So that could be for merely a respite stay, or it could be a move for the end of life phase. So we can help with that kind of coordination. We can make sure that hospice or palliative care teams are in place so that the person is receiving all the care that they're eligible for and that they really deserve to have at that time. If it's further back, I mean, I've worked with people just sort of a one-off on advanced care planning forms, or someone was interested in learning about green burial options locally for them, or someone was interested in writing their own obituary. So sometimes it's really meeting with someone just a couple of times, and then you've made that connection, and maybe down the road they'll call you back when there's more need.
Wow. Why did you become a doula?
Such a good question. I mean, I feel like I can't imagine not being a doula. I think that it's such an amazing opportunity to be entrusted by people during this most vulnerable time, whether it's birth or end of life or grief. It's just an incredible honor, and it wakes you up. I mean, every time I do this work, it wakes me up again to life.
Sure. Wow. So you were a birth doula first, correct? And then
Yes.
you just sort of evolved and grown from there.
Yeah, and it was due to some losses we experienced as a family. And we had a number of deaths that were sort of right in a row. And that included two of my grandfathers, my father-in-law, and our dog. And my children were quite young. And I myself hadn't really experienced a whole lot of loss personally that felt close to me. So it was a phase that we really had to kind of sink into and lean into and learn from and lean on each other. And I realized that during those times that I was providing emotional support or my presence, it felt very similar to when I am at the bedside of a birthing person, because there's so much that is unique to each experience and you can't plan for it all. You can do your best. I am an advocate of healthy preparedness, but you really have to just feel out the moments as they come and decide what would be most beneficial. And I noticed that just as with birth, people have different levels of comfort. So, and some people want to be closer to the experience, and some people prefer to be further back. And as a doula, I'm able to kind of move in and move out in accordance with their needs. And so, those aspects I felt like called to me just like they do at the beginning of life.
It's such amazing work that you do, I think. I really do. I take
I
my
mean, it's
hat off to you.
incredible that I get to do it. It really is.
So, can you tell us about your book, Cultivating the Doula Heart? Is this a guide that's just for doulas, or does it offer grief support for people?
It is meant for doulas, for anyone who feels like they want to be better prepared to offer emotional support for those facing the end of life. So it's more focused on the anticipatory grief process, but there is some about post-passage visits in there and how to facilitate that debrief with the loved ones after a death. So there's some about grief as well. It's very succinct, you know, it's concise. I wanted to kind of get to the heart of it. And I go through the acronym doula. So it's dedication to presence, open-mindedness, understanding with compassion, listening intently, and allaying distress as the pillars of doula care. And so I think it's applicable to anyone who wants to be there for someone else who's going through something difficult.
Okay, that's great. And you've also created a children's book called Map of Memory Lane. So why did you decide to write a picture book about grief and loss?
Well, this came from many, many comments that I had been hearing either in the course that I built, the Death Doula training course, and also workshops that I hold and in my work as a doula, that there are quite a few adults among us who, when they were children, they weren't really allowed into the dying journey with maybe, you know, a grandparent or somebody else or even a pet. They were largely kept in the dark and they weren't given access to what was happening and they weren't given information even. So their questions weren't answered and they were left feeling really confused and really alone in the grief. And I completely assume that the adults in their lives at that time were trying to spare them suffering and pain, yet it really left them to their own imaginings. And children have wild imaginations, which can be amazing, but can also lead them to wonder, you know, is this my fault? Did I do something? Or have such a misunderstanding of what happened that they carry those as wounds. And even as adults, they've gone unhealed, but they're still very present and very tender. And so I wanted to provide parents, grandparents, teachers, therapists, you know, whoever has children in their life that they care for with a tool, a communication tool to be able to introduce such a layered concept
Right.
to the youngest of humans.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful because it just made me think about, you know, for myself growing up, and we never talked about grief. I never really heard the word grief. And I remember for me, I learned how to avoid. And so it wasn't until I was 49 that I actually went to my first funeral, which was my dad's, because I would avoid like the plague. I didn't know what to say. I felt so uncomfortable because we just didn't talk about it. Growing up, there was no, like I say, I never even heard the word grief. So I think this is, it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, children need to understand in some way, shape or form. So when is the, what would you say is the right time to talk to kids about the end of life?
I mean, I think in advance of a major loss is most ideal. Sometimes we don't have that opportunity, so we have to start having the conversations when they're actually facing a loss or when a loss has already occurred. And that can be okay. The issue there is that sometimes the adults are feeling so emotional personally about the loss that it becomes more difficult to care for a young one through it as well. So this book is very open and it's very basic. I don't even use the word death or dying, which I certainly promote using clear language, but I wanted to make sure that this felt like a gentle opening for people. And I didn't want to close any doors for people who were afraid or who would be upset by that. So, you know, it's this little kid Lee asking their grandparent, you know, will you live forever? And then the grandparent offering a coping technique, you know, saying, no, I won't, but I'll always be in your heart and always be in your mind and your memories. And the child asking, well, how can I see you? How can I find you? And so Nana explains, you can find me on memory lane. And so this is a place where any child can visit, any human can visit memory lane. And it's very accessible. You know, you don't need anything with you. You can do this anywhere. All you need is a quiet moment and to be able to tap into your imagination. And I wanted to make sure that it was also very open and welcoming in terms of there's no reference or imagery related to any particular religion or spiritual practice. And from here, with this foundation of this conversation and this coping technique, then people can sort of fold in and have conversations about their own family traditions and culture and beliefs on top of this.
Right.
So it can be very invitational for people. But for kids, you know, it depends on their developmental stage. It depends on what they're facing currently, and it depends on their questions. So I think it's important that we let kids lead the conversation and we check in and we ask, what questions do you have? Because our assumptions are usually pretty off, and we don't want to overwhelm them. We don't want to give them more information than they're seeking. You know, this book is inspired by a conversation I had with my own grandmother, and I asked her, I said, "Grandma, are you going to die?" And she was perfectly healthy and everything was fine. And it was clear out of the blue. And she said, she kind of chuckled and she said, "Well, no, not right this minute, but yes, I will someday." And that's okay because I've lived a good life. And it was just the right amount of information. I didn't have any follow-up questions. She didn't sort of launch into a long lecture. She was available, and I knew that because she did answer my question honestly. And that's what we need to do, is sort of gauge what our kids need during that particular moment.
And I think it's hard, you know, like when parents say, "Oh, grandma's gonna, she's asleep," you know. Well, so then the poor child is fearful of
Of
going to
falling
bed,
asleep.
or if mum and dad go to bed, maybe they're not gonna wake up. So I think it's really important to be clear and honest with children.
I do too, because then, you know, we're trying to block them from that pain and hurt, but then it feels so much heavier when they're in the thick of it. I grew up with someone who reached out to me because her husband, this is a different friend, but someone from my childhood, her husband had been enduring a type of incurable cancer for a number of years, and you know, they thought he was stabilizing and then he wasn't. And then they could tell he kind of turned the corner and he was nearing the end phase. And she was reaching out to me because her kids were, they're very young, and she's trying to support them while trying to manage this herself. And I mean, I don't have, there are no magical answers. There's no easy way through it. So I provided a listening ear and then encouraged her to think about, she already had a copy of the book, and so I made sure she had the companion activity file as well, my map of memory lane. And so she let me know that she and her kids and her husband, as he could, were working on their map, excuse me, of memory lane together. And so they're going back through their most favorite memories, their treasured times, they're drawing pictures, they're writing it out. And they're adding page to page to page, like up as they can. And then when it became time for it, they knew that it was the last day of his life. They knew that time was very short. The mom told me that she checked in with her daughter, who was her youngest, and asked her, you know, if she wanted to say goodbye to daddy, and now would be the time. And so she said goodbye to him, and then she came back to her mom and she said, "I'm going to be okay, mommy." And she said, "You are, you know, you are okay." And she goes, "Yeah, I'm going to go to memory lane." And so she knew that she could access that for herself as she needed. And of course, her heart was still going to break, but she knew that that bond she had with her father and the memories that they had created together would always be there for her, and that that would continue.
I think it's just beautiful and so helpful for children. So, what can families do to support a child through grief? What would you say?
I think making yourself available and making sure you're sort of checking in, but not being forceful for these conversations to happen. So, you know, you could ask if they're interested in reading this book. You know, I got this new book. And then you can see, does this naturally bring up questions? Does this naturally lead us into a conversation that's bigger than this? And to never pretend that you have all of the answers. That can feel uncomfortable for us, but it's actually really important that we're honest about it. And so sometimes we can say, you know, I wonder that as well. Or you can say, I'm not sure, but what do you think? And you can kind of turn it back to the kid. Or you can also engage in some magical thinking, like if they're asking, you know, what do you think happens after we die? And you can say, you know, I don't for sure know. Or you can lean on your belief system as well, or you can talk about different belief systems, what different people think, and to see if something resonates there. You can even go deep into your imagination and into magical thinking and say, wouldn't it be amazing if this happened? And so you can really explore it together and try to keep it a little more light, but also Let them know that if they have questions to check back in, and let them know that there are tools and to be available for these conversations, because sometimes we are better able to kind of be there for adults and be a shoulder to lean on. But when it comes to children and teenagers, we're not sure. We don't want to say too much. We don't want to upset them. So sometimes we say nothing at all. And then they feel completely alone in it. And we
Yes, I
want to
think,
avoid that.
yes, saying nothing is one of the worst things that we can do, and being
Yes.
available and just being open and honest, as you say, is one of the best gifts. And listen to them and help them move through it. What would you say is unique about this book?
Well, in it, I mean, one of the scenes that I wanted to capture was Nana herself visiting Memory Lane. So she says in it, Memory Lane is a place where anyone can go when they want to visit with someone. And so she herself, there's this beautiful illustration that I didn't do, but that my illustrator did, of her visiting her memory lane in honor of her own father and when she was a child. And to me, I think this is really important because sometimes children feel like, well, a grandmother, that loss seems expected and that it might not hurt as much if you're an adult because. Whatever thoughts you have as a kid, because you have different tools, different perspective, because you've done this before, because of course your parents would die because you're getting older, whatever they're thinking, but that they know that adults actually grieve too. We mourn, we all do, we all feel
Sure.
sadness, we all feel that sense of longing. This is universal. And I think that that helps children feel even more connected to the experience and to us.
Absolutely. So I have to ask you, where can people find out more about you and your books?
Sure, my website is francescalynarnoldi.com. So it's my name. And in there, you can find the books and blog posts I've done about them. And also, when you sign up for my newsletter, you will be emailed the My Map of Memory Lane, the companion activity file, which is digital and people can print it off. And then you can print off as many pages as you need to continue to add to it. And I encourage people to think about starting their own map of memory lane, even during good health. And you can continue to create that together, and then eventually it will be a keepsake for the child.
Absolutely. Wow, this is great. Francesca, I have to say thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and for sharing all of your wonderful work with us. You truly are a gift to this world.
Oh, thank you. That means so much. And I appreciate the invitation and the work you're doing. It's very important.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, you lovely people, that is it for this week's podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it and that it was helpful for you. If you'd like to find out more about my services and programs, then please visit my website, givegriefachance.com. There you can drop me an email, you can ask a question, or you can share your story via voice message, and I'll be happy to play it on the podcast. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate it, like it, and share it. And if you feel like it, why not come and join me on Instagram at Give Grief a Chance Coach. And last but not least, I would like to invite any women who might be struggling with their grief to come and join us in a safe and nurturing group on Facebook. It's called Life After Loss with Diane Morgan, and I would be honoured if you would come and join us and give your grief a voice. Okay, my friends, take good care and have a wonderful week. Thank you.